on this snowy Thursday. Thank you for joining Wintrust Business Lunch with me, G. Suki. But of course, you can just call me G. Only 40% of Americans could pay an unexpected $1,000 expense. Whether you're in the same boat or you're an advanced investor with a good amount of savings, we have a senior portfolio manager that's going to be joining us for the second half of the show that's going to be here to take your questions. So be sure to jot down the number 312-981-7200. You can text us your question or you can call in. We will be taking calls with this fantastic senior portfolio manager from Kingsview Asset Management, and he will be taking your calls and your text questions. So 312-981-7200. But we're going to start with the senior managing editor for CNET. Joining us is Dan Ackerman. Hi, Dan.
Hey there.
Thanks so much for joining us. Before we launch into all the cool products that I know we're excited to talk about, I wanted to touch base on this Jeff Bezos story. This is just an incredible story. How is it possible billionaires are just like us and can get hacked too?
I guess so, especially when they use WhatsApp and all the other apps that we use and don't have especially encrypted, you know, phone or other device different than, you know, the average person on the street. It just goes to show you, people get messages from what they think are trusted contacts, and that may not always be the case.
Well, you write about tech all the time. Were you surprised, Dan, to find that this happened through WhatsApp? I know WhatsApp has about 1.5 billion active users worldwide. And what I've heard and a lot of users have been told is that it's a safer app to use, especially if you are worried about hacking.
It is a safe app to use in general, and it is very popular, especially worldwide. And the messages are generally encrypted from end to end, which means that I can send you a message and you can receive it, but no one in the middle is able to intercept and read that message. But when someone is sending you something through the app that is itself unsafe, well, then the encryption doesn't really matter because it's the person at the other end of your trusted conversation who is the problem.
So, Dan, you're saying be careful what you download or what your phone might automatically download without you knowing it, depending on the settings.
I mean, going back to the beginning of the personal computer age, the virus of a malware has very often been something that you would receive, trust, and then click on and open or activate in some way, whether it's an Office file or a photograph or a video file. Today, in the most extreme cases, you don't even have to open the file. It can trigger itself, and that may be, we're not 100% sure yet, that may be what happens here with a video file that Jeff Bezos allegedly received through WhatsApp. That's a very targeted kind of attack, though. And in this case, it was somebody specifically targeting a famous, powerful, rich person. You have to figure out what your threat profile is and whether someone is specifically targeting you to really figure out what level your paranoia needs to be at.
Dan, I don't think I'm on their radar, that's for sure. But definitely,
that's what they want you to think.
A lot more to figure out with this story, and I know you guys will be keeping up with it as it moves along. Okay, so let's talk about iPhones. There's a rumor that there might be an iPhone around the $400 or less than $400 price point.
You know, Apple keeps everything very close to the vest, especially when it comes to iPhones. But every year we get a lot of good leaks, especially from the component manufacturers and the factories where these things are being assembled. So the current story is production is ramping up or about to ramp up on one of the newer iPhones. And they're usually announced around September of every year. And this year they allegedly will be adding a new lower cost model, which they usually don't do. Apple likes to play in the higher price ranges, although they have had less expensive iPhones before. The iPhone SE several years ago was basically a stripped down older version they rebranded and sold for about $500. So if they have a new phone that's $400 or $500, that's certainly a big difference from $1,000, $1,100, which is the standard for a premium phone now. And I think if people say, oh, I can get iOS, it is an iPhone, I can say I have an iPhone, but doesn't have the biggest screen or all the newest features, that's still okay.
Well, I was reading a lot about this pushback that consumers are having right now towards all of these phones, because you can't get a phone for under $1,000, as you said. And we're going to be talking about some of the other innovations that are coming with cell phones, including flexible and folding screens. So that's coming up with Dan Ackerman, Senior Managing Editor for CNET. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've been talking with the Senior Managing Editor for CNET, Dan Ackerman, about cell phones. And we are so excited that there's going to be an iPhone, supposedly, rumored, that's going to come out, that's going to be way under the $1,000 plus price that we all have been paying for these fancier cell phones. Dan, I'm assuming that the cost of cell phones have just been driven up based on how much cell phones can do for us now.
Well, the cost is largely driven up by adding new features and by one person saying, hey, our phone is going to be $1,000. So the competition says, well, our premium phone has to be $1,000 also. We're even beyond that. We're up to $1,100 or $1,200 now for some of them. That said, they certainly add a lot of, you know, bigger screens. They're going to move into 5G antennas in most of the phones over the next year or two. We're even seeing some like the Samsung Fold that have these flexible screens, and those are closer to $2,000. That's more of an early adopter thing. And then when you go back and try to get the $400 or $500 phone, they go, okay, we'll step back a couple of generations and give you, you know, no facial recognition, but you have the fingerprint reader instead and a smaller screen and a camera that's not as good. So they hold back on a few of these things to give you the less expensive version.
Dan, you know what that's about? It's about FOMO, the fear of missing out. So then if my friend has facial recognition, I want to have that on my cell phone too, because then I feel like I'm missing out on something fantastic.
Oh, especially all the camera technology where you want to have, you know, three lenses on the back and all these special photo modes that you'll never use because the you know, the camera on the phone just takes perfectly fine pictures on automatic mode.
Well, I may need to shoot something slow-mo underwater at some point, okay? That's my hope, Dan.
I hope so, too, for you.
So you understand both sides of the argument when it comes to this whole, the big next thing with cell phones is going to be flexible and folding screens. You just mentioned that. So you kind of see both sides of the argument when it comes to why, I mean, why do we need this?
I think that people feel like we need something special like this because phone design has hit a little bit of a plateau. All the phones are the same sort of slab of glass and metal and plastic. If you take one high-end phone, you look at another, they kind of all look and act the same. We haven't figured out a way to break out of that yet, and that makes it harder to convince people to drop $1,000 every 12 to 24 months on a new phone. So they keep having to try to come up with new gimmicks, basically. And flexible screens are certainly a very interesting gimmick that might have some legs if they can get it to work right. And that's where the screen itself is actually made of plastic, not glass, and it folds in half. So you have a small device and you open it up and you have a much bigger screen because of that. And I see that not just in phones, where we have a couple of examples where it's worked, you know, okay, but not perfectly. I just got back from the CES show, the big technology trade show in Las Vegas, where they had several folding screen computers, actually things that look almost like iPads, but then fold in half and make bigger screens or smaller screens. And that's actually, I think, a more interesting take on it.
I totally agree with you, because then in terms of portability and it being very convenient, I could see having a tablet or a laptop that actually folds down. Have you had much experience with the foldable cell phones yet? And does it seem comfortable to you? I mean, is it easy to use? And does it feel like it's going to break when you put it in your pocket?
Now, that's always the big thing. People are very concerned about these because it's so many extra moving parts. And whenever you have that, that's a potential point of failure. And when the Samsung Galaxy Fold, the first unit, started going out to people last year, a bunch of them immediately broke. And then they pulled the product, and then they had to wait a few extra months before they started selling it again. And the people I talked to this year, primarily in the computer space, who are making these, say that they have learned a lot from that experience, from watching that. And there's a lot of engineering that I've seen that go into particularly the hinges and how you protect the sides of the screen from debris getting in, which is really a big cause of the trouble with this. It's going to take a couple of generations before it's stable enough, I think, to be used everywhere. So the first people to get these, whether they're phones or laptops, because the first computers with this are going to go on sale about halfway through the year, are definitely going to be those early adapters who don't mind taking a risk in getting something that's not quite as burned in yet because they want to be the first guy on the block with something.
So, Dan, just to recap, the jury's still out in terms of the foldable and the flexible screens when it comes to cell phones. And we don't know the exact price yet on the affordable iPhone that Apple is going to release at some point this year. Do we have any idea when that's going to happen?
I mean, if I bet, I'd say, I mean, probably September, along with the other new iPhones, which will be, you know, bigger and fancier and more expensive. If I had to guess on the price for the inexpensive one, you know, $400 to $500.
Got it. Okay. So senior managing editor for CNET, Dan Ackerman, this is when we get your recommendations for gadgets under $50. That's what I'm talking about. What do you got for us?
Oh, all right, all right. I looked at a bunch of lists of $50 recommendations people had recently. A couple of things jumped out at me, a couple of things I have. Obviously, everyone always says if you need a streaming device for your TV, I can't believe you can get like a 4K Roku Plus for $50 now. That's an amazing price. And they've just added Disney Plus to the Roku lineup. So you can pretty much get any kind of streaming service on there. You know, a lot of TVs you buy now have the smart apps built in. But the smart menus on the TV, they're terrible. Nobody likes using them. It's a lot easier to hook up an external box.
They're really hard to see, and they're really hard to navigate.
You know, a couple of companies have Roku software built in, but I think it's TCL and maybe one other TV brand. So if you don't have that, you get yourself a Roku box. You'll be much happier. And then my other budget thing I just added recently was, now I'm an Amazon Echo guy. I have Echoes in a bunch of the different rooms in my house. But I got my hands on a Google Nest Mini, which used to be called the Google Home Mini. It's their version of the small puck size thing. Again, it's under $50. Frankly, it's usually on sale for like $30 or $35. It does mostly the same stuff, but it's a different voice. And instead of saying, I'll say her name quietly so we don't wake her, instead of saying, Alexa, you say, hey, Google. And I've just ruined everyone's day now by doing that. So I have the Echoes in most of the rooms of my house, and I have the Google Nest Mini in my bathroom now so I can get the weather, you know, anytime.
Okay, those were great recommendations for under $50. Next time, Dan, just be sure to spell the name Alexa.
I know, we'll need a code word.
Okay, before we go, this was a story on CNET that really caught my eye. I am blind as a bat. My contacts are horrible. My prescription is negative 5.5. That's how blind I am. But I saw that there is a contact lens that could change my life. In an article. What does it do, and how is it going to make my life better?
Yes. One of my colleagues went to go see this at the CES show. It's basically a smart contact lens. Now, they wouldn't let him put it in his actual eye yet, which is probably good, because if a bunch of people come in to see it, we don't want to be sharing a contact lens. They had it up on a little pedestal, and you could kind of put your eye up against it and see, and it has a little display inside. This is still, you know, it's not something you can go out and get yet or really probably any time in the next year or two, but they've shrunken down the display so much that they can put it in there. And the interesting thing, I think, to make it an assistive device is there's some night vision built into this prototype as well, which can help you, of course, see in the dark, which as somebody with also very bad eyesight, that's one of my big issues. So I'm super interested to see where this goes. Right now, you still have to have like a phone size, you know, power pack sending it data that you clip on with you, and they're not quite ready to actually stick in your eye and try yet, but I bet by the end of the year we'll be able to demo that in a more, you know, on the face way. But super interesting stuff.
So it's Mojo Vision is the company, and these smart contacts can put text in your eye up close, and then it can also help me see in the dark. I don't know that I necessarily need all of that just yet, but maybe in the future.
But come back in 2 years and you'll say, I can't believe I was able to live without this.
There we go. That's FOMO. Once again, fear of missing out. Well, thanks so much for all of your recommendations, Dan, and breaking down all the stories for us. Dan Ackerman, Senior Managing Editor for CNET. Of course, CNET's website is cnet.com. Thanks, Dan. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, a lot more coming up on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200. That's the number to call us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And also, you can text us your questions. Joining us is Paul Nolte. He's the Senior Vice President and a Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Wealth Management. Paul, it's so great to have you in studio.
Nice to be with you.
I know you're very familiar with WGN Radio Studios.
I am. This is becoming my second home. I'm enjoying
Yay.
It.
We appreciate that, especially because you get to impart your financial wisdom to us. Before we answer some questions, wanted to go over a few things. You say that we're in the middle of an earnings season. And what do you mean by that?
So what we're seeing right now is every quarter, all the companies report their earnings. They come out publicly and say, this is what we did last quarter. This is our revenue, what our expectations are going forward. And it always, this is actually the busiest day as far as companies reporting today. So it gets cranked up usually that second week after quarter end. And then it goes through probably about 3-4 weeks, and then it starts to tail off as we get into the second month after the quarter end. So this is an informational period where we find out a lot about what's happening in corporate America, what they're seeing, what they did, how did they do. So it gives investors a chance to take a look at what their companies are doing.
And how are you feeling overall about the expectations for the earnings season?
Yeah, the expectations are always high. Mm-hmm. They've come down here a little bit as interest rates have come down last quarter. Last year, earnings were flat, so there was no growth at all, yet the market was up 30%. This year, they're anticipating a 10% growth. And what we've seen so far from a lot of the companies that are reported, they're on track for that, maybe a little bit under. We got earnings numbers from Procter & Gamble. They weren't so hot. Some of the banking stocks last week were pretty good. Those that are closer to the consumer, not so much. So again, we're trying to tease out little bits of information from a lot of these companies to try to build the case for what may be happening in the overall economy and where the markets may go from there.
We've seen a lot of investors and analysts push back their fears of a recession, and the stock market continues to rise. Do you feel that that's a good philosophy?
Well, I mean, you know, we're always, as an advisor, I'm always worried. My clients are like, you're never really bullish.
But you don't have gray hair, though.
Well, I do plenty of worrying, and only my hairdresser knows. So when we take a look at what's going to happen, one of the things that really we focus in on is what the Federal Reserve is doing. And the Federal Reserve has been very monetary easing. They cut rates last year. They're probably going to step aside this year because they do not want to get involved in politics. This being an election year, they don't want to see us favoring one party or the other. So they've cut interest rates. They're sitting aside. Interest rates are very low. The markets generally like very low interest rates. It allows corporations to buy or to borrow at very low rates, buy back stock, do different things with it. So it is a very good environment from that perspective. So as long as the Fed continues with their easy monetary policy, stocks should be able to do pretty well.
Well, Paul, let's get to some questions. You're already getting some text questions in from listeners. This is from the 312. 48 years old, have about $100,000 in a 401k. I just increased my allocation to 10% each pay period. My employer matches 3%. Any strategies to maximize retirement savings? Again, this caller, this listener is 48 years old.
Yeah. You know, it's going to depend on
the situation. That's good, right? $100,000 in a 401k?
It's not too bad. It's okay. Not too bad. So again, you know, the dirty secret of the financial investment world is the answer to every financial question is identical. It depends. It depends on your situation. But with this particular person, they can take a look and putting some money away for themselves in a personal account that's already taxed, a joint account with their spouse. Roth IRA, depending on their income level, is a good way to go as well. You do not get the tax deduction that you do in a regular 401k, but that money continues to grow without paying taxes. And when you take that money out, you're not taxed on it either. So you want to make sure that you have a balance between 401k assets, personal assets, and Roth assets. The reason for that is when you get to retirement, you don't want to have $1 million in a 401k because every dollar you take out is going to get taxed. So you want to have money in every bucket as best you can to make the choices then, or have choices when you retire, about where am I going to pull money from that are most tax efficient.
But Paul, is 312 on the right track because they've upped their allocations to 10%?
They are. And
would
again,
you recommend higher?
Well, I mean, they can max out at 14-15%. But again, it may come at the expense of having money in other buckets. So depending on their income, they might be able to move money over into a Roth that will have a lot of the same benefits without the tax deduction of a 401k. The other thing that we generally counsel people with, too, is each year they get a raise, 3%, 4%, whatever it is. Take that raise and bump your contribution to an IRA by about 1% each year, so that you still, your paycheck is still bigger, but you're also making a bigger contribution to your 401k each year, and it's fairly painless by doing it that way.
So, Paul, you're telling me if we get a raise, don't spend it on fun
stuff.
Don't
spend it.
Oh, come on. No, I won't regret it in the long run. That's right. Okay. Only 40% of Americans could pay an unexpected $1,000 expense. Were you surprised by this statistic?
No, just judging by your previous comments, you went out and spent it all.
No, I didn't say that's what I want to do. I didn't say that's what I did.
But that's what happens with a lot of people when they take a look at it. And, you know, some of the comments that I get back from people, it's interesting. They say, you know, I got a lower refund this year on my taxes. And we're in the middle or beginning part of tax season. I usually get a $5,000 refund. I only got three. And I'm like, well, you're doing something wrong because you shouldn't get any refund. You should be using that to save. The trick is going to be really living below your means. And that's the hard part right now for a lot of people to do it. It's always looking at the Joneses.
We're going to talk about some easy ways to start saving with Paul Nolte, Senior VP and Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Wealth Management. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200, Wintrust Business Lunch, taking your questions about retirement and investments here with Kingsview Wealth Management's Paul Nolte. Hi, Paul. You're doing fantastic. I love that you're here answering all these questions.
I enjoy it. Always fun.
So we were just talking about how most Americans, 40%, wouldn't be able to pay $1,000 unexpected expense, and you don't seem surprised by that.
No, I don't, because again, a lot of people are spending what they earn, and there's a couple parts to this. It's very different now with our generation than our parents' generation. Our parents had a pension. We don't have a pension. We're reliant now on ourselves to put money away for a 401k, so we have something. Parents didn't need to do that above and beyond what they were saving. Our parents were also very good at living within their means. So if they made a...
Why are we bad at it?
Because we're being bombarded with all kinds of things that, you know, we need to have. You need to have this to be the cool kid, to be the cool family, to do these things. Look at how much everybody else is enjoying it. Some of it, too, is even social media. You know, there's that pressure of, look how much fun everybody else is having. Why am I not? But there's a couple things that you can do every day to kind of help you along the way. One is give yourself an allowance. Go back to when you were a kid. $100, $200 a week, whatever it is, take it out in cash, and that's what you spend on Starbucks. You go out to the movies, you know, go axe throwing, whatever it is that you want to do, and that's what you spend cash on. You don't swipe the debit card, because the debit card's kind of like poker chips. You just throw it out in the middle of the table. It doesn't have meaning to you, but when that's gone, you're done. So all the movies and all the rest of that stuff, stop. If you make it to Thursday, great. If you make it to Saturday, cool, take out another hunk of money and do it again. So, and the second part of it is write it down. And it gets to be a pain, but if you are cognizant of what you are spending your money on, it slows that thought process down of, I have to buy this today, I have to do it. Write it down, take the time to think about it, slow that process down. And it stops a lot of the impulse buying as well. So those are a couple things that you can do, as well as just making those contributions to 401k, to a savings account, something along those lines. And it doesn't have to be huge dollars, $10, $20, and then increase it every couple months or every year.
This is a question from the 224. When should I rebalance my Roth IRA, and why is it important?
This is an interesting question because, again, you hear about it a lot of times. It's important to rebalance. It's important to be invested and then make sure that, like over the last 10 years, the markets have done phenomenally well. So if you were 50-50 stocks and bonds, your stock portfolio now will probably be 60-70% of the portfolio because it's grown much faster than bonds. So now you're looking at it going, well, it's in a lot riskier portfolio than it was when I first set it up. So every 6 months, every year, you want to go back out and rebalance it. So sell the asset that has done really well, buy the asset that has done poorly, rebalance it back to that 50-50. The reason for that is because the asset's done very well tends not to do well forever. The asset that has done poorly can pick up and do better in the future. So you're buying cheap, you're selling the expensive stuff and buying the cheaper stuff. So it makes sense to do. You can do it on a monthly, quarterly, annual. Annual certainly is a good way to go.
And the 224 asks, what's the tax percentage on pre-tax money, I'm guessing, in your retirement fund as you take it out after age 65?
When you retire and you start pulling money out, and this is what we alluded to earlier, the difference between a Roth IRA and a regular IRA 401k. Anything that you're pulling out of a regular IRA or a 401k IRA gets taxed at whatever your tax rate is when you pull that money out. So if you're 65 and you're in the 22% tax bracket, 22% of it's going to get taxed. If you pull money out of your Roth IRA, you've already paid tax on it. There is no tax on the Roth IRA when you take that money out. So again, it's important to have money in each of those buckets so that when you do retire, you can say, I'm going to take a little bit out of here, a little bit out of here, and you can manage your tax liability and what you owe in taxes.
This is from the 708. My husband is turning 70 this year. I heard about a new policy that he doesn't need to take RMDs, required minimum distribution, until 72. Is that true?
Yes. Welcome to legislation that got pushed through in December called the Secure Act. So anybody that is turning age 70 this year, they do not have to take distribution until they're 72. So if you are 72 years old this year, you probably have been taking distributions. But for those that are returning, it used to be 70 and a half. They've changed that now to 72 starting this year. So for those that were lucky enough to turn 70 this year, you can wait and postpone that distribution until 72.
Talking with Paul Nolte with Kingsview Wealth Management. He's a senior VP and portfolio manager. And Paul, we've got a caller. We have Tim on the line. Hi, Tim. What's your question for Paul?
Hi. So I'm 25 years old, and me and my fiance, same age, have about $50,000 between the two of us.
Wow.
In our 401ks. And right now it's all in stocks because we've got a really long time in the markets. So I'm wondering if you'd recommend that we kind of stay the course on that for a while, or if we go to more of a one-third, one-third, one-third between internationals, domestics, and bonds. Thank you.
Tim, before Paul answers your question, I just would like to say, this is G, that I'm very proud of you. I think you're doing very well.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It's definitely tough, and we definitely have to do it below our means, but we're enjoying the investing so far.
Now, let's see what Paul has to say.
No, that's an excellent start. So you probably want to start taking a look at international emerging markets only because those are very inexpensive parts of the market. They've also haven't done all that well the last couple of years, part of the reason why we think they will do well going forward. And it may be a good idea to start taking a little bit of money out of the equity market, put a little bit of money into bonds. I wouldn't do much more than 5% or so at your age. And then as you hit the various milestones, every 5 years or so, increase that fixed income weight as you go along because you're going to have less and less time to have the markets recover for you.
Tim, I hope
fantastic.
That,
thanks.
Yeah, I hope that helps. And when is the wedding date? Have you and your fiance set a date yet?
Yeah, actually, we were just on the phone with a baker yesterday, October 17th this year.
So I'm guessing you're going to have to set a budget for the wedding and all of that, too, to make sure you still
We actually pared back our investment amounts per month a little bit between now and then just so that we've got more cash on hand for the wedding. So,
Well, Tim, you show off. Thanks for calling in. Congratulations, and it sounds like you're doing great. Thanks so much for your call.
Thanks, the show's great.
Thanks. We've got a text, actually, from 224. If I simply invest in the S&P 500, boy, and have we been hearing a lot about that, over the next 30 years, is that sufficient, or should I have single stocks and bonds, et cetera, in my portfolio?
That's an excellent question. Over the long run, stocks should do better than bonds. And if you're looking at the S&P 500, realize that you're going to be invested in Apple, Microsoft, Visa. Those are the bigger companies. As long as they continue to do well, my guess is the return on that will probably be somewhere around 7-8% or so over a 30-year period. individual stocks, you could get caught. You might be buying a very good company today that disappears inside of the next 20 years. You can go back to GE as a great example. It has not done well. So diversification is a very good thing. I would probably lean more toward the S&P 500 than individuals.
We just have a couple minutes left, but Paul, just really quickly, the 352 wants you to talk a little bit about annuities, and then the 630 is a 76-year-old widow. She lost her husband about 10 years ago. He put everything into annuities. She's got about $1.5 million in annuities. Should she worry or is she safe?
Annuities are complicated. Let's just start there. But in essence, what an annuity is you have bought a pension plan. So you can then turn the income on. You can get regular monthly distributions. So there are some benefits to having an annuity. It's not dependent on necessarily dependent on what the markets do in order for your income to come into you. So it is a little bit safer, but you have to understand what you're getting into. There's a lot of costs associated with it, and what you think you're getting today may not be what you're getting in the future. There's also some other tax ramifications on the dollars coming out. So again, like I said, it's a lot more complicated than a regular stock or a bond.
Kingsview Wealth Management, Paul Nolte, thanks so much for being with us. Can we do this again?
Absolutely.
I think the listeners like the answers that you've been giving to their questions. So your website is kingsviewam.com. Thank you so much to Paul. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.